This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hi, welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name is Matthew White and I'm a journalist at the Financial Standard team. Private credit has certainly stirred a lot of interest in 2025 in Australia. We observed ASIC's effort to provide more clarity and transparency around this particular obscure space. However, provided that the sector is still maturing domestically, it will be an immense interest for local investors to understand private credit on a global scale. Today, we have Tim Warwick, Head of Alternative Credit at Principal Asset Management, to see how the asset class will pan out for the new year. Thank you for being with us, Tim.
It's great to be with everyone today. Thank you.
So Tim, before we jump into the outlook, I just want to ask, how has private credit performed globally in 2025?
It's been a really good year. Interesting year, of course, with some of the policy uncertainty and geopolitical issues, but there's always uncertainty in the market. And that actually oftentimes provides opportunities, especially for private credit managers and where we focus specifically in U.S. middle market direct lending. So the structures have remained really resilient. Actually, borrowers and private equity sponsors generally looking for less leverage now that we've been in a higher for longer rates environment. And pricing is still really competitive, especially when compared to the public high yield market or broadly syndicated loan market. The premium has actually increased as public market spreads have reached near all-time tights.
I want to talk about the specific, which area and regions really outperformed and where have they underperformed in this asset class?
Our focus is on U.S. middle market direct lending primarily. There's definitely a very developed market in Europe and a developing market in Asia into Australia, and even a more early stage developing market in Latin America. So my comments would be more about middle market direct lending in the U.S. where it's more of a little bit more resilient, diversified market, definitely a very diversified economy. So what we're seeing there is a really strong performance from a credit perspective with default or non-accrual rates still well below long-term averages, around 1.35% in the broader market over the past 12 months compared to 2%, 2.1% average over the longer term. And we've also seen credit spreads tighten a bit, but the income component that drives the return profile remaining really strong. In fact, our portfolio has been over 10% yield for the entire year. Though it's a floating rate and base rates are coming down a little bit, we're still over 10% gross yield today, which is nice as investors can count on that to drive returns, not waiting for capital appreciation down the road or some kind of uncertainty that might be in the public equity markets or in private equity or whatever the case might be. Here, it's really driven by the income we're receiving regularly. And then if you can make sure you don't have credit events, which has been really the standard in the market, a really strong market from that regard with the downside protection we bake in with covenants in all of our deals and collateral, first lien loans in most of what we're lending. So secured by all the assets of the company, it's been a good market and we expect that to continue into 26.
What can investors really expect in the new year?
Yeah, 2026 looks promising. We've got central banks around the world starting to provide more accommodative policy. The Fed here in the U.S. has been easing and lowering its base rate. So Fed funds rates are coming down, but probably a little bit more of a level pace from here on out, maybe a couple more moves in the coming year, keeping rates at a reasonable level still. But that's generally an accommodative environment, supporting more LBO and M&A activity in the U.S. So we are seeing that pace of activity, that picked up a lot post-Labor Day in the U.S. So the fourth quarter, the pace of activity has been really strong for new LBO and M&A activity. So sponsors acquiring companies, family offices acquiring companies, other investors looking to invest in middle market sized companies. In the U.S., we just have a lot of companies, middle market companies owned by baby boomers. In fact, middle market companies represent over 40% of U.S. GDP. And there's over 200,000 middle market companies. So there's a lot of transactions, a lot of opportunity for consolidation. We think some of that's been pent up over the last couple of years. And a lot of that will start to occur and the pace of that will build in 2026 with the more favorable economic conditions, the supportive policies, as well as some clarity on the economic front.
You've listed out some, quite interesting themes, that's going to play out in the new year. But are there any upcoming events that may influence the asset class also in a negative aspect?
Well, the pricing has definitely become a little more competitive. It's still very attractive relative to public markets. So pricing has come down a bit. 2 years ago in 2023, we would have been talking about spread premiums that would be about 100 basis points, 75 to 100 basis points higher than we are today. So if spreads continue to compress, which I don't think they will, we don't expect that. You know, we would start to see a little bit more reduction in yield than what we would see as favorable, especially as base rates come down. The overall yield on the asset class would come down more than what we would see as reasonable. So again, we think spreads will remain reasonable. Spreads will probably even widen in the coming year as the SOFR base rate comes down a little bit, as the supply of transactions picks up. So our base case is for spread or risk premiums, inefficiency premium to actually increase. But there's always a chance the demand continues to be really strong and supply doesn't materialize quite like what we're expecting. And then I think another thing is always, it's always based on economic conditions. And one of those things that can drive economic conditions are more systemic risk or volatility in the public risk markets. And if that volatility, which we haven't had much now for some time, where public credit spreads are at or near all-time tights, if there would be more volatility, more uncertainty as the Fed's trying to pause, inflation is not remaining quite as tame as what was hoped by the market, but they still want the Fed to be more accommodative, that could create some increased volatility in the public markets, could create uncertainty with consumers and businesses, which would maybe affect spending and overall economic outlook. You know, we don't expect that volatility in the private market, but if the volatility broadly in the broader public markets affects economic conditions, ultimately that could affect and impact the performance of underlying private companies in the middle market. So you've always got to be looking for that. And we always underwrite for the worst case environment. What are the recessionary conditions that could be on the horizon? How can the companies we invest in and the industries we invest in, should, you know, they need to be resilient through a potential cycle? And we're always cautious of that, but underwriting for that as well.
So just following on that question, how much does the volatility from the US alone affect the global private credit, you know, sector in a global perspective?
I think the US markets do, and it's a global world, we know that. Global markets, all markets are interrelated and trading 24 hours a day right now on the public side. And that volatility from policy, from economic conditions, emanates from anywhere, and geopolitical issues as well. But the US can set that standard a bit in the central bank policy and such. And so it's more the public market volatility and uncertainty that I believe will drive global credit conditions to some extent. When we're talking about private middle market direct lending, we're really able to, it's very refreshing to me. I've managed public credit as well as focusing on our private credit and building that business and such over the years. But it's really refreshing that we can focus on the true macroeconomic environment, the true macro risks from an economic perspective, the true credit risk of the underlying companies, and not get as caught up on the volatility and potential for systemic risk. That's kind of technical factors that the public market worries about and creates artificial volatility of liquidity, whereas we have more of just a steady income, steady performance, steady valuation, steady performance underlying credits that can underwrite for, you know, any risk from an economic perspective or a company-specific perspective. So we look at it as it can have an impact, but again, it can be a distortion to public markets that we don't need to price into the private market. That creates a stability and a diversification benefit for investors.
The regulator in Australia, ASIC, is looking to tighten, you know, policies and provide more clarity and transparency for investors locally. So how will, you know, a more stringent policy benefit or hinder growth in the sector?
I think it's healthy, and whether it's media and persons through the market talking about the risks of the market, or whether it's additional oversight and clarity, we always believe in transparency with our investors. You know, throughout the market, we manage funds that have regulated or regulated funds that need to comply with different regulations, both in the public and the private market. So to us, greater transparency, that oversight, that engaged arrangement with the regulators and working in coordination with the regulators is the right perspective and healthy for the market, healthy for investors as well.
In terms of, you know, wholesale access, private credit traditionally has been institutional, you know, strictly institutional only. How has like evergreen products, you know, like introduced more wholesale access towards the asset class?
Yeah, it is an exceptional opportunity for investors, both institutional and retail and wealth channel investors to gain access now through the evergreen solutions, semi-liquid solutions in many instances as well. And that opportunity provides significant diversification benefits for investors as a part of their overall broad portfolio. Again, the income component is a significant component. The stability of the performance is a nice feature that provides a diversification benefit. And then the general access, not needing to commit as large dollars, not having the lockups that many institutional products might have. And just have to make sure all investors should, you understand the manager's capabilities, what's the manager's true strategy. Is it more of a public product that has a little bit of a allocation of private assets, or is it truly a more heavily focused allocation to private middle market direct lending? That's what investors in many cases are desiring for that income and diversification benefit. So, need to be able to diligence the manager's capabilities, the ability for that manager to continue to originate and underwrite those top quality loans in the sector we're focused on, U.S. middle market direct lending, that investors want exposure to. So a lot of research should go into it, both as an investor and advisors to investors, but it's an exceptional opportunity to have that access in a reasonable structure and cost and ongoing access, as well as ability to generate some liquidity as needed. But of course, there should be other features in an investor's portfolio that are going to be the primary sources of liquidity.
Absolutely. And, speaking of accessibility, I think there's a theme playing out, in the US and probably globally as well. But what is your view on, tokenization of private credit, breaking up easier access for retail investors?
Yeah, that's coming. And there's a lot of initiatives around the world, a lot of initiatives from a lot of different asset managers, as well as investment and investor platforms. Some of them all one and the same, but that is going to continue to be something that transpires. A lot of firms trying to create more liquidity in the private credit markets. I think we'll all need to step back and be cognizant that the more liquid we make this market, the more it becomes public-like. And if it becomes more public-like, you get back to what I mentioned earlier, potential for artificial volatility or artificial volatility of liquidity based on the technicals in the market. And if you have flows ebbing one way or ebbing the other, it can create that volatility. And those flows can be totally focused on just macro events and not focused at all on company-specific issues whatsoever. So that's why we're very focused on the lower middle market in the U.S. and core middle market, as well as focused on sponsored back transactions, as well as non-sponsored, where there's less competition. In those areas, there's an ability for us to deliver more consistent excess yield, but importantly, lower leverage with true covenants and true strong credit structure that is not available in the public market or the upper middle market.
Those are all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much for your time, Tim.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.